And we're holding on Chofches Amud Beis, seven lines from the bottom. We said in the Mishnah of Yehuda had said that. So we talked about in the Mishnah, you have what's called korev nisrachik. You have somebody who was a relative and isn't anymore. For example, for example, a person whose daughter is married to Pliny. So that their father-in-law and son-in-law, therefore either of them is possible edus to the other. Now, what happens if that daughter passes, or the wife of the wife of the son-in-law passes away, and now they're not relatives anymore? Now, so the Mishnah had said that then it would be kosher, but Rabbi Yehuda had said that no, if the daughter passes away, but the son-in-law has children from her, then he's still considered connected to his father-in-law, and therefore they'd be possible edus to one another. So what's the halacha? The Gemara says, Amr Tanchum, Amr Tavel, Amr Bruno, Amr Rav, halacha could be Yehuda. So the halacha is like him. So even in such a case, they were father-in-law and son-in-law. Now they're not anymore, but nevertheless, now there are still grandchildren. The father-in-law is still their Zayda. Then the halacha would be like Rabbi Yehuda, the apostle to Edus, the apostle for Edus to each other. On the other hand, Rava Amr Rav Nachman ain't halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Rava tells us in the name of Rav Nachman, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. They're not considered relatives anymore. V'chein Amr Rava Baba Chana Amr Rabbi Yechanan ain't halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. So they would be able to give edus for one another in this case. Now the Gemara says, Ika demasni l'lahoda Rava Baba Chana aha. There are those who said that Rava Baba Chana's statement was not in reference to our Mishnah, but rather in reference to something else. Namely, the Braisa says this is Zudarash Rabbi Yosi Aglili Darshan as follows. The Torah tells us, Uvaso ala, you should come when you have a din Torah, and in particular the Psukim are talking about over there, when you have a case that you that the lower Bata Dinim don't know what the answer is. They're arguing about it and they haven't come to a conclusion. So the Pasuk says, Uvaso ala Koinim, you should come to the Koinim the Levim, who are members of the Sanhedrin Gdola, and to the judge who was at that time, meaning in other words, you come to the Beis Din HaGadol, and they'll tell you the Psak Halacha. Now, Rabbi Yosef says, when else could he be? Could a person conceivably go to a shofet who's not in his times? Why add the words Asheyiyah Bayamahim? Rather, Rabbi Yosef is saying that pasuk is talking about where the judge, where the shofet himself, was formerly a relative and now is not. So again, a similar kind of thing where, for example, where the judge, the member of the Sanhedrin, was married to the was married to somebody's daughter, and now that daughter passed away. Now he's kosher to judge him. So therefore, the pasuk is saying, "Ashayir bayamahem," meaning, in other words, if you had come with this din Torah a day or a month or a week earlier, whatever it is, when the wife was still alive, then he would have been possible to judge you because he's your relative. But now that Ashayir bayamahem, now in the time when the case comes to based in, he's no longer your relative, then he's able to judge you. And Amar Rabba, so in that, Amar Rabba Bachana, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, halacha could Rabbi Yisrael Glili, that the halacha would be like Rabbi Yisrael Glili, which means, in other words, that, so therefore, so in other words, Rabbi Yisrael Glili is saying the same thing as the Chachamim of our Mishnah, that it is kosher. So some say that Rava Bachana wasn't referring back to our Mishnah, but rather he was referring to this Braisa, but either way, it comes out the same thing. He's saying that it is kosher. So the Gemara gives a story in this connection. Bnei Chamur de Ma'ukva, the sons of Ma'ukva's father-in-law. So these are his wife's brothers. They were relatives who now became distanced because the one that holds them together is Ma'ukva's wife, and she had passed away. Also, the Kamela Dina. So they came at one point to Ma'ukva for a din Torah. Amalahu tells them, "Pastil dinner. I'm possible to judge your case." Amrulay, they say to him, "My daitcha k'Rabbi Yehuda. What do you think? You're thinking to paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, because at one point we were relatives, therefore we're still considered relatives, even though since then our sister, your wife, has passed away. We're not. The fact is, anan my sin and igur to mimarova. We can bring a letter from the west, meaning from Eretz Yisrael, from the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael. To ain halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. That the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. After all, we just said Rabbi Bachana says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan. Either he says directly on our Mishnah, or he says on the Braisa that the halacha is that krevim nisrachaku is kosher. So why won't you judge Rabbi Torah?" So he tells them, "Do you think that I'm stuck to you with a calf of wax?" In other words, do you think that What do you think? I'm saying that I still am connected to you because of Rabbi Huda's opinion. No, Deloitte come in a psilla no, I'm not. It's true. I'm not attached to you anymore. The reason, the only reason I'm saying that I'm possible to judge you, Elamashum, because I know you're not going to listen to what I have to say. Because having been brothers-in-law for a while, now you're very comfortable and familiar around me, and therefore I know that if now I sit as a dayan and tell you you have to do such and such, then you're just going to shrug it off. So it's not because lahalo, it's not because. As a matter of technical halacha, I can't judge you. But because practically speaking, I know us having been brothers-in-law, then you're not going to respect so much what I say in the Din Torah, and that's why I'm passeling you. So we see, in other words, that even though the halacha is, strictly speaking, not like Rabbi Yehuda, or kosher, nevertheless, you do have to do it on a, you do have to figure on a case-by-case basis, is it going to be something like that where you know that they're not going to listen because they because of that prior relationship, and then in that case, then yeah, go find a different dayan, which would be more relevant as far as dayanim. It's less relevant as far as edim then, because after all, edim, you don't have to listen to them; they just have to see what's going on and testify and based it. Next, we said in the Mishnah, oihev zeshu shvino, we said in the Mishnah that another other people who are possible to give edus or to judge would be the Mishnah said, a friend and an enemy. And we said an oihev, a friend, doesn't just mean any old friend. It meant a shushvin. It meant one of those people that we learned about in Bava Basra who are part of your web of close friends, where when each of them gets married, the other ones are going to contribute to expense towards the expenses of it, and they're going to be invited, etc. So they're really good friends. And then we said a soine is where they didn't talk to one another for 3 days. So that was Rabbi Yehuda had said that, and then the Chachamim said to him, Jewish people are not suspect to go and testify falsely because they love or hate the guy. Rashi pointed out on the Mishnah when it comes to when it comes to being dayanim, the Chachamim would agree that they can't, but when it comes to Eidos, the Chachamim are not going to say that Jews are not suspect of going so far as to testify falsely because of this. So v'kama, when we say zeshu shvinoi, how long does that psul last according to the Behoda, that is a shushvin? It means throughout the 7 days of Sheva Brachas. The Rabbanan Mishmei the Rava Amri Afilu Miyom Rishen VeElach. The Chachamim say in the name of Rava that even from the even after the first day he would be kosher. Only on the day of the wedding itself would he be possible. The Yad Rama actually gives a different understanding of this line of the Gemara. He says he learns it. He breaks off after the word Verabbanan, and the question is Verabbanan. What about according to the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda? According to them, is the Shushvin ever possible? And the answer is that no. Even from on the day of the wedding and afterwards, they would hold that he's kosher, and they would never say that a Shushvin is possible. Okay. Then we said hasone kosher dibrachula. We said that an enemy is defined as somebody where they didn't talk to one another for 3 days because of hatred, because of anger. So the Gemara says tanarabanan. The pasuk says the context of the pasuk is talking about when a person has killed somebody else b'shogeg, and therefore he has to be sentenced to go to the orei miklat. So the pasuk says v'hulei oyevloi. So the half of the pasuk that the Gemara is going to darshan over here is v'hulei oyevloi v'lei mevakesh rasoi. He wasn't an enemy to him, and he wasn't looking to do bad to him. So in other words, in context, the pasuk is telling us that you're talking about Reuven killed Shimon, and he didn't hate him. He didn't mean to do anything to him, and there was an accident. So then he has to go off to the Orei Miklat. But Rashi points out we have other psukim that are talking about the Ritzeach himself. Therefore, instead, we can understand that this pasuk is actually referring to the is actually referring to the edim and to the dayanim. So v'hulay oyev lo yidenu. So the pasuk then we can understand to be saying that he's not his enemy. Such a person can say edus about him. V'loy mevakesh rasoi. And when it says he's not looking to do bad to him, that would refer to the yidunenu. Yidunenu. Then he would be able to judge him. meaning, in other words. So again, you have those other psukim that mention about the Reitzeach himself, and so Oyevloi would mean that would refer back to the Edim who are saying that he's Chayiv Golos. The Rashi points out the next words in the beginning of the next pasuk, the very next words after that in the Torah of a Shoftua Eda, that the Eda should judge and decide what the situation is. So therefore, so V'loy Mevakash Rasoi is meant as an introduction to V'shoftua Eda. Who should be the members of the Eda who are going to judge him would be people that V'loy Mevakash Rasoi. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says there we see therefore that an oyev that there we see therefore that an enemy should not be an aid or dayan about him. Okay, the Gemara says now again the Chachamim disagree because they say that they say that we don't suspect Jews of testifying falsely. So how the Chachamim will learn the Psukim we'll talk about in a minute. First of all, Ashkechon Soine. Okay, well, that shows that would apply to an enemy. How do we know that a friend, that a close friend, like Rabbi Yehuda had said, a Shushvin, is also possible? And the answer is Kribe Hochi, because you can also learn the pasuk as follows: when he's not an enemy to him, but you can also interject the words v'loy oyev loy, but he's not a close friend of his either. Yidenu, then he can say edus for him. V'loy mevakash rasoi, but he's not looking to do bad to the person. But we can interject also v'loy tevasa, he's also not looking specifically to do good for him. Yidinenu, then he's the one who can judge him, which would imply therefore that neither an enemy nor a friend can do that. I said, "Midi oyev ksiv." The fact is, the pasuk doesn't say oyev or anything like that. Or how can you interject those words when the pasuk doesn't actually have them? Rather, el svarahu. Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda is going to get it from a svara. Oyev, my time, mashum de merach gadaite. Why, after all, would an oyev, an enemy, be possible to give eidos, so to judge, according to the way Rabbi Yehuda understands the pasuk, would be mashum de merach gadaite, because his das is far away, meaning, in other words, because he doesn't like the guy, therefore there's a concern that he might judge him falsely, or he might testify against him falsely. Well, then a friend also, his mind is close to him, and he might say something untrue in his benefit. Okay, so that's where Rabbi Yehuda gets it. So he does have the psukim that refer to an oyev as not testifying or judging him, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying based on a svara, we can also extend that to where he's his friend. What are the Chachamim darshaning in that pasuk? And the answer is chad the dayan. Fine, one of them goes on the dayan. They do agree that the dayan can't be someone who hates the baldin, because then there's a concern. The dayan, after all, has a job. And part of his job is to try to find every possible way to exonerate him. And if he doesn't like him, then he's already biased, and he's not going to do that. So one of them refers to that. Idach, as far as the other part of the pasuk, that would be kedetanya. They say we can learn from that what it says in the following braisa. Amar Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, ne vahuloi oyev loy v'loy mevakash rasoi. This same pasuk that says he's not an enemy, his enemy, and he's not looking to do bad to him. Mikan l'shnei tamar chachamim shasonin zeh zeh. From here we learn that if you have two tamar chachamim who hate each other, she'in yoshim b'din ke'echad, they should not sit on the same beis din, because basically what's going to happen is the one of them is going to say a svara, and the other one, for no other reason than because he doesn't like the other one, is going to try to slog up that svara. So in other words, then you're not going to get a fair din, because like this, if they were basically indifferent to one another, if they didn't particularly like or hate each other, then they would be able to. Reb Reuven, the first dayan, is saying something. Reb Shimon, the second dayan, you know, that's a good point. Let's consider that. As opposed to if Reb Reuven and Reb Shimon don't like each other for whatever reason, then Reb Reuven is going to say something, and Reb Shimon is Davka Aftzalochas going to try to slug that up, even though Reb Reuven's Svara may be completely correct. So they shouldn't do that, in other words. So in Yoshim Radin Ke'echad. In fact, the Bach says that if they're at least b'dieved. Now we're saying they shouldn't sit in judgment together, implying that if b'dieved, if they did, it would be fine. The Bach actually brings that if they're sonim gmurim, if they're real haters of one another, then it wouldn't be a valid din even b'dieved. So in other words, we have to evaluate ahead of time what what the relationship is between these between these two potential dayanim. Now, of course, I mean, if we're talking about a based in town, then bepashtos that's already been worked out when they first sat on the based in. But in other words, like this, we talked, for example, at the beginning of the parak about a zabla based in zeboru le'echad, where each of the bale din picks for themselves a dayan, and then two of them jointly pick the third one, whether the two bale dinim joint whether the two bale dinim jointly according to the mayor or the two dayanim themselves. According to the Chachamim, as we learned at the beginning of the Perek, either way, we would have to make sure that they're not sonim gmurim, that they're not really hating one another, because if so, then it's not going to be a valid din Torah, says the Bach. Okay. Mishnah says, "Ketzed boit ginesa edim." How do we examine? How do we cross-examine the edim? Here in our Mishnah, we're going to be focusing on dinim momenus. In the next perek, because basically our perek is talking about dinim momenus. In the next perek, we're going to talk about the same thing as far as dinim nefoshes, how we cross-examine them. They bring everybody into a room, into the Beis Din Shtibel. The first thing is we try to frighten the Edim into telling the truth. We'll see in the Gemara what kind of things we tell them to make them realize if they're going to testify falsely, how severe the consequences are going to be. So that's the first thing we do. Then we send everybody else outside of the Beis Din Shtibel, and we keep the elder of the two Edim. Meaning, in other words, we don't want the two Edim to be there, because then obviously one of them is going to learn from the other what to say and what not to say. So we have to cross-examine the Edim one at a time. But perhaps the Bale Din are still there in the Beis Din as well. We don't mean we send out everybody. The Bale Din may well still be there as well, but we mean the rest of the audience and the other aide are sent out. And we tell him, Emor, so tell us, let's say it's a case of dinim momenus that you're telling us that Reuven owes Shimon money. Well, how do you know? What's your basis for saying that Reuven owes that money to Shimon? Now, for example, if, for example, they say, well, Reuven himself told us that he owes the money to Shimon, no good. That doesn't count, as we're going to see in the Gemara. Or, for example, if the aid might say, Ish Pliny Amali Shu Chayev Loi, that a third party, that Pliny, that Levi, told me that Reuven is Chayev money to Shimon. Loyama Klum, neither one works. The first one, as we'll see in the Gemara, even though they're saying that Reuven himself said it, it's only valid only if he said it in a way that the Gemara is going to call odissa, which is an official admission that can be taken to Beis Din, not stam that he says it, as we'll see in the Gemara, we'll work out the details. And the second one is hearsay, and hearsay evidence is possible in Beis Din. Mefarshim point out, by the way, the expression ish ploini is interesting. Ish, a lot of times, means a very important person. Like you have, for example, in Pirkei Avos, ish Yerushalayim, ish Tzereda, etc. It doesn't just mean a person from Yerushalayim or from Tzedakah, it means a very important person from there. So here they're saying Ish Pliny, a very important person, told me. Nevertheless, that's still not valid Eidos. When would it be valid is if they're saying, for example, that Reuven told us in the presence of Edim, meaning I'm one of the Edim, and then the other Eid who came with me is the other one, that he admitted in front of us that he owes 200 zuz. As we'll see in the Gemara, the details about that. So when he says it in front of Edim, that's a valid Odissa, that's a valid Hoda, and then therefore that can be dealt with and based in. Obviously, you could also have that they say we saw the actual loan, etc. But the point is, in other words, it can't be that we just heard it by hearsay or an admission that doesn't amount to a valid Hoda. Okay. Once we've interrogated him and found that his aider seems to check out, then they bring in the second aid and they go through the same process again. If it comes out that what they're saying matches up, at that point then the dayanim start discussing the matter. At that point, by the way, as we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow, everybody else is outside the Beis Din Shtibel. Once they've heard the Eidos, we don't want anybody to be present while they're deliberating, because in particular, we don't want the Bale Din later on to know that inevitably during the discussion, you're going to have some of the Dayanim are going to be saying, you know, it seems more likely that Reuven is right, and others are going to be saying it seems more likely that Shimon is right. We don't want the Bale Din to know who was actually arguing in which direction. We just want them to know the Psak Din, the bottom line Psak Din. Gomer was a dover, so once they finished the matter, sorry, I skipped a line. Shnaim omim zakev ve'echad omer chayev. If of the let's say it's a based in of three, as we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, that for dinim momenes that's all you need. So if two of them are saying that he's innocent, he doesn't have to pay, and one says he's guilty, he has to pay zakai. Then we go according to the roiv, and he's exonerated, and he doesn't pay. If two say he's guilty, he's liable to pay, and one says he's innocent, then he's chayev, again, majority. What about if one says chayev, the other says zakai, and the third one doesn't know? It says, I don't know what to say. Or even if you have two of them say one way and the third one says, I don't know. So you might think to yourself, well, what's the difference? Even if he said his opinion one way or the other, either we're going to have two dayonim saying chayev or we're going to have three dayonim. What's the difference? Either way, we're going to have a majority. And unlike by din and nefashos, where you have, unlike by din and nefashos, where you have to have super majorities or things like, and where you can't have that all of them to begin with judge him guilty by din and it doesn't work that way. So on the face of it, you would say, so what's the problem? You have one dayan who says you don't know, then you judge that you have the case decided by the two who say we do know. No, that doesn't work. Yosifu dayanim, we have to add two more dayanim, because otherwise, in effect, that one who says I don't know is considered as though he wasn't there. So now it would come out, you have only two for the Din Torah, and two is not enough. You're supposed to have three. As we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, in principle, maybe at least according to Shmuel, two could judge a Din Torah, but it's called a Beis Din Chotzuf. It's called a Chutzpah Beis Din. But that, so it's not the right way of doing things. It's supposed to be that a Beis Din should consist of three. And right now we don't have three because the one who says any yadea, we consider as though he wasn't present. So therefore, we need to add extra dinim. Therefore, we need to add extra dayonim, and then they'll rediscuss it among themselves, and eventually they'll come up with a verdict. This is, by the way, we learned in the first parak. This is how it's possible to have. We said by dinim nefashos, you're able to have a majority of two. And we said, how could that be? It's either going to be a majority of one or three. It's always going to be an odd number because you start out with an odd number of dayanim. The Gemara had explained there that when it comes to adding dayanim, you don't necessarily do that. That you do add them two at a time. But again, because you have one says any yedea, then therefore you can end up with an even numbered majority. Again, that's relevant as far as dinin nefashos. For dinin mamonos, it doesn't really matter. A majority of one is considered enough. Okay. Gomru as a dover, once they finish the matter, once they've come to a decision, then they bring back in the Bale Din. Now, the Mishnah has not said anything about them sending the Bale Din out. But so we'll see about that. We'll see about that in the Gemara. But anyway, so now they bring them in. So now the greatest, the most senior of the Dayanim says, you plenty of Zaka, you plenty of Chayev. Now, how do we know that even after the Dayan has left the Beis Din Shtibel, Lo Yoimar, he should not say to the Bale Din, Ani Mezakeh, he shouldn't go over to the person who lost, let's say, and say, you know what, I would have been, I was on your side, I was defending you, and my colleagues are the ones who declared you Chayev. What could I do? I was outvoted. How do we know he shouldn't do that? On this, the pasuk says, "Don't go as a talebearer, as a baal lashon hara among your people." Meaning, in other words, if he's going to do that, it's going to be like he's spreading lashon hara, he's spreading tales. Which is, in a sense, that's basically what rechilos is. Rechilos is where you go over to Reuven and say, "Do you know what Shimon said about you?" And then that's going to cause friction between Reuven and Shimon. So here, the same way, the Dayan would say, "You know what? Do you know what Reb Shimon said about you in the Din Torah?" So therefore, so you can't do that. For Omer, and you have another pasuk from Mishlei. What's the definition of a rochel? Is somebody who goes and reveals secrets. So he has no business revealing the secrets of the Beis Din because the whole point was we had everybody out there while they're deliberating on the matter. So therefore, and so you have no business revealing that secret.
Now, the pasuk over here in the pasuk that's quoted over here in the Mishnah, Lo Yiseilech Rochel Ba'amecha, is in parenthesis, and in fact, there are girsis that don't have it because what would be the necessity? Why the bra we're going to have a braisa in the Gemara that's going to quote both psukim, and but if the Mishnah already had both psukim, first of all, the Gemara wouldn't need to quote the braisa, and second of all, anyway, I mean, if we already have a pasuk from the Torah, we certainly don't need a pasuk from ksuvim to tell us the same thing. Torah outranks ksuvim. However, the Tosfos Yom Tov on the Mishnah points out. But listen, maybe we do need both psukim. You could say Loiseilech Rochel means don't start arguments like this by going and telling Reuven what Shimon said about him. Here, you might think though that after all, Reb Reuven, the first Dayan, is going to say to himself, you know what? If I don't tell this guy, he's going to think that I was one of the ones who voted against him, and he's not going to like me. Maybe therefore, I should tell him that I in fact was on his side. Nevertheless, we need to say the second pasuk, Hoilech Rochel Megalasoid, that no, that is also a form of rechilus, and you're not allowed to do that. We'll see in the Gemara though that sometimes you can have there is a case where the Baal Din is able to say Mehechan Dantuni, tell me on what basis you judged, and then we're saying they do write him out of Psak Halacha, but even then not necessarily do the Dayanim identify themselves which one said what during the deliberations for the same reason. Now, the Mishnah had started out by saying that we ma'aymin aleihem, that we try to scare the Edim into telling the truth or into withdrawing if they know that what they're going to say is a lie. So, what do we tell them? What does the iyum consist of? Amar Rav Yehuda, hochi aminim lahu. So, Rav Yehuda says, we tell them a pasuk like the following, nisiyim beruach v'geshem oyin. There's clouds, there's wind, but there's no rain. In other words, you see when the weather makes it look like it's about to rain, but it doesn't rain. Ish mishala b'matas shoker. Then that's like a person who praises himself on giving a false on giving a false gift. So elsewhere, for example, the Gemara mentions that it means. So elsewhere, the Gemara darshins it means, for example, people who pledge to give tzedakah and they don't give it. So then the result of that is that Hashem acts kind of midah keneged midah, and Hashem makes it look like it's going to rain, and then it doesn't, and the people are disappointed, and there's a drought. Here, when we're talking to the Edom, we use it in a similar sense. We say ish mishalol b'matas shoker refers to a person who's going to say false eders. He's going to pride himself that he's going to give, that he's going to cause. So actually the Yad Rama explains what they're telling him. Why would you, if you're testifying falsely, why would you do that? Mistama, because they're offering you money to testify falsely. So that payment is called matas shoker, is a gift in order to make you say a lie. So then we tell them the result of that, you're going to cause a drought. There's going to be terrible suffering in the world with a drought because you're accepting money to testify falsely. Marsha says a different vote on it. Marsha says, imagine, for example, let's say, for example, this aide Yankel, where again, we don't know that he's testifying falsely, but we have to consider the possibility that he is. Maybe let's say this Yankel owes Shimon money from previously. Now he's stingy and he doesn't want to pay Shimon, or he possibly can't afford it. So he thinks to himself, you know what? I have an idea. I'm going to go testify falsely that Reuven owes Shimon money. And then the result is the money will be taken from Reuven and given to Shimon. So Shimon will get what's supposed to be coming to him, and I won't have to pay it. So therefore we tell him, no, that's matas shoker, that's giving a gift falsely, that's giving a gift at somebody else's expense. You can't do that, and you should realize that if you do that, it's going to cause a drought in the world. Omale Rava, but Rava says that's not going to scare him necessarily. He's going to rationalize to himself. Yachli lemeimer, the Edim, even if they are going to testify falsely, they might rationalize to themselves and say, you know what? Like people say, Shev Shni have a kafna, there was 7 years of famine, above a umnalecholif. And yet it never passed by the door of the craftsman. Meaning, in other words, that you have certain people. A person thinks to himself, there are certain people, even when there's a drought, even when there's a famine, there are certain people who are rich enough and they have enough of a constant flow of business that they're not really affected by it. So the Edom are going to say to themselves, okay, so there'll be a drought in the world. Big deal. I'm pretty much immune to it. So that's not going to scare them off of testifying falsely. Maharsha brings in connection, and this connection, by the way, is an interesting point that we find when Pare, he says, when Pare first meets Yosef's brothers, when Yosef brings several of his brothers to meet Pare, and Pare's first question to them is, "Ma ma'aseichem? What do you do for a living?" That seems like a bit of an odd way to start the conversation. So Maharsha says it's based on this Gemara over here that, listen, if you're Bali Umanius, if you have a trade and a craft of your own, then why are you coming here in the first place? Even during a famine, you could still manage to make parnasa. And they answer him that we're pasturing sheep, and the fact is there's no grass for our sheep in Eretz Canaan, and that's why we came here. So in other words, what they're telling him basically, yes, we are Bali Umanius, but our Umanus does depend on the rain and does depend on the crops. Okay. Ella Omar Rava. So Rava says, fine. So never mind what Rabbi Huda said. Let's try a different thing. We Amrin and Lahu. We quote them the following pasuk: Mefitz v'cherev v'chetz shonun, a sledgehammer and a sword and a sharpened arrow. Ish Oynibre'eu, aid shocker, is a person who testifies falsely against somebody else. Meaning, in other words, we tell him now the sledgehammer and the hat and the sword and the arrow over here, we're referring to the tools of the Malach HaMavis. So in other words, we tell them that your false aiders is going to cause an epidemic here. Is going to cause the Malach HaMavis is going to come and run riot, Rahman al. However, Omalei Rav Ashi, but Rav Ashi says really that's not going to scare them off either. Yachli lemeimar, they can then rationalize to themselves and say, again, as an expression goes, Shev Shni, have a Moisana. For 7 years there was an epidemic. The Inish Boy Shnei Lo Shchiv, and yet nobody passed away, not in their time. In other words, they were going to say to themselves, listen, the Eibishter decides how long a person is going to live. Yes, there's an epidemic, but still it doesn't mean that people are going to die prematurely because of it. Ultimately, Hashem decides in advance how long each person is going to live. So the fact that we're trying to frighten them with the threat of an epidemic is not necessarily going to scare them off. By the way, the Aruch HaNer points out they're not correct in saying that. The fact is, there's a Gemara in Chagiga that says Yesh Nisba B'loy Mishpat. Sometimes there are people who pass away without judgment, meaning in other words, like it wasn't predestined that they should die at this point. The Gemara talks about over there about how the Malach HaMavis can make mistakes, which is a little odd in itself, and the Malach HaMavis is a Shliach Ve'Evishter, but whatever. The point is, in other words, they're not right in saying that, but nevertheless, they may rationalize it to themselves, and therefore, it's not going to scare them off testifying falsely. Ella Omer Rav Ashi, rather, Rav Ashi says, never mind threatening them with consequences that are going to affect everybody else. Make them realize that this affects them themselves. Omeli Nosin Bar Mazutra said to me, to Rav Ashi, Amrinan Lahu, what we tell him is, Sadi Shakri, lying Edim, a'ugrayhu, where they're doing it, even to the ones who hired them, Zili, are considered degraded. In other words, what happens? We're telling them like this: you might be false Edim. Why might you come be? And B, why might you come as false Edim? Because one of the Baal HaDinim is paying you off. You should know, even that person who pays you off thinks to himself that really what horrible, degraded people they are, that they're willing to accept money to testify falsely. So in other words, Pashut, we appeal to their own sense of self-worth, their own sense of self-pride, that people don't usually want other people to look down on them. So we tell them, you should know, if you're testifying falsely, then even those people who hired you are going to look down on you. Dichtiv, as we find the pasuk, you have the whole story with Novos being accused falsely so that Achav can kill him, can have him killed and take his vineyard. So the expression in the pasuk is that the instructions that are being given to the Dayanim, to the corrupt Dayanim in the city of Yisrael, is Vahishivu Shnayim Anoshim Bnei Belial Negdoi. You should have two people, Bnei Belial, sit opposite him. Bnei Belial means people bli oil, without a yoke of Torah and mitzvahs, people who think the world is hefker. V'iduhu lemer, and they will testify against him, saying Berachta l'kim b'melach, that you cursed Hashem and the king, and then they'll have him executed. So we see that even in the instructions, you're calling them Bnei Belial. You're saying that even you, corrupt Dayanim as you are going to realize that such people who would do such a thing, testify falsely, are Bnei Belial. So therefore, we say the same kind of thing to the Edom over here. Realize that if you are actually doing this, you're taking money to testify falsely, that even the people who are hiring you for that are going to think of you as Bnei Belial, as worthless people. Okay. Now, the Mishnah said, "Im omo hu omo lichola," that we said, if the aide says that the reason I'm saying that Reuven owes Shimon is because Reuven told me he owes the 200, or he says because Pliny, because somebody else told me that he owes him, then no good. But ad sheyomru, when is it a valid eidus? Ad sheyomru, if the aidim say, "Befanenu hoydeloi shu chayv lemasayim zuz," he was moida in our presence that he's chayv 200 zuz. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about that din. The expression "befanenu" suggests that he knew that we were present. So Messiah le Rav Yehuda, that supports what Rav Yehuda says. The Omer Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Tzorach sheyoma atem edai. In order for them to be valid edim, the loiver, the one who's owing the money, would have to say atem edai. You would have to specifically say, "You are my edim," and then that way that makes it a valid hadar. And now later on, he can't change his mind and say he was joking or something like that. The Rambam actually holds that that would only be if he's saying only if, that if he's saying derech hadar in the first place. If he's actually saying, you know, it's true, I am admitting that I owe him 200 zuz, then you wouldn't need to say atem edai. Only if he's saying it in a course of conversation would he need to say. The Rosh disagrees with that. In any case, the point is that we see the expression befonenu suggests that he specifically designated us as edim and knew that we were present. Itmar Nami, we said also Om Rav Chiya Ba'aba Om Rav Yechanan. If Shimon says to Reuven, "Monali biyadcha," listen, you owe me a mana. What's the story with it? V'omalehein, and Reuven says yes. L'macha omalei tnehuli. So the next day, Shimon comes and says, "No, you told me you owe me the 200, so give it or the 100, so give it to me." Omar mashatani b'cha, and Reuven says, "You know what? I was only joking. I was only saying it in a way of joking. Listen, you know, you're gonna joke on me, and you're gonna make up a debt that I don't owe you. Then I'm gonna answer back with a joke and say, sure, I owe it to you, but I wasn't actually meaning to be moida." So Rav Chiya Ba'aba says potter, then he would be potter. Same reason, because he didn't say atom edai. So we see, in other words, that he does have to say atom edai. This is in parenthesis, and actually the Rif has a girsa more specifically that he has to say atom edai. But it amounts to the same thing. Tanya Nami Hochi, we learn similarly in a Braisa, Monali biyodcha, Shimon says to Reuven, "You owe me a mona," Omale Hain, and Reuven says, "Sure." Lamacha Omale Tnehuli, and the next day Shimon says to give it to me, Omale Meshatani Bacha, and he says, "I was only joking," Potter, then he is Potter because again, he didn't say it in a way where he definitively said, Atem Edai, that you are my Edim. V'loy oid, not only that, ela afilu hichmin loy edim achore geder. Even if, let's say Shimon has edim hide behind a fence to overhear what's going on. And at that point, Shimon says to Reuven, "You owe me a mana," Omaloi Hain, and Reuven says, "Yes, sure, I do." And Shimon says, "Ritzoncha shetoyde b'fnei Pliny u'Pliny." Are you willing to say that admission in front of Pliny and Pliny Edim? Omaloi. Now let's say Reuven says no. Misyarani shem techpeni ledin, because I'm afraid that if I say it in front of Edim, then you are going to force me to come to Beis Din. And it might even be that you're going to force me to pay right away, and I can't afford it. The next day, Shimon says, "So give it to me." And Reuven says, "All of that is I was joking." Potter. Then he's Potter. In this case, there were Edim, and then they were hiding behind a fence. Doesn't work because he didn't say Atem Edai. And the Braisa finishes off. So that's what we're saying in the Mishnah. When we say Befanenu Hodeloi, it has to be in our presence, meaning he knew full well that there were Edim there when he said, I owe you the 100 or the 200, and that he's accepting that they are the Edim. So again, according to the Rambam, he doesn't always have to say Atem Edai. It would depend. Well, it depends how he's saying it, whether he's saying it derech hadar or just in conversation. But the point, according to the Rosh, disagrees with that. But the point is, he has to know that the Edim are there. In other words, the Aruch HaNer points out if it weren't for that, the Mishnah would have used the expression Shamainu Shaploini Hoida. We heard Ploini being moida that he owes the money. So the fact that it says Befonenu means he has to actually know that we were present, not that we were behind a fence. Now the Braisa continues, Ve'ein Tonin L'Mesis. We do not argue on behalf of a Mesis to try to find any a Mesis. Somebody was trying to convince somebody else to worship Avodah Zarah. We don't. Beistin doesn't try to advance any arguments in his favor. If he himself points out an argument in his own favor, then of course we have to listen to it. But Beistin doesn't. Unlike with other Dini Nefashis, where Beistin themselves is obligated to come up with everything with all arguments possible to exonerate him, by a Mesis we don't do that. This is Mesis Mandachar Shmei. Where did a Mesis come in? We didn't say anything about a Mesis until now. And the answer is Chsuri Mechsura. The Braise is missing words of a Hochi Katoni. It means like this. Now, Imloitan. So now we're saying like this. Again, we have the scenario where Reuven has said to Shimon, yes, I owe you 100, but we're saying that it's no good because he can say Meshata Hisibacha. Now, Imloitan, what if Reuven does not come up with that argument of Meshata Anibach? Let's say, for example, he just says that, you know what, I don't want to pay you. Let's say, for example, fine, bring your Aiden. So then, then that wouldn't work. Ain toinen loy, then Beis Din is not going to advance that argument on his behalf. So if Reuven, if Reuven knows to say Meshata you see b'cha, then fine. Then we say that okay. Then Shimon, you don't have a case. But if Reuven says, I don't know, you're telling me I owe you 100. Fine. Maybe I do. Maybe I don't. Bring your Edim. Then it would be valid for Shimon to bring out his Edim who were hiding behind the fence and say, here they can testify that they heard you saying this. And Beis Din is not going to say on behalf of Reuven, you know what, maybe is it possible Shato over Dinin Nefoshes. Now, when it comes to Dinin Nefoshes, Afagav, even if the defendant is not arguing anything in his favor that they could argue that he could have, Toyin and Lloyd, nevertheless, Beis Din is required to come up with the to come up with arguments on his behalf. So whether whatever kind of arguments that could be brought, he himself may not think of them, but Beis Din is obligated to bring them to bring up any possible argument on his behalf. However, the ain turn the mesis. However, when it comes to a mesis, it's not like that. A mesis, of course, is going to be chayiv misa. Nevertheless, for that purpose, we treat a mesis like dinim mominus. Any argument that he himself brings up in his defense, then fine, we have to listen to it and evaluate it. But any argument that he didn't bring up, we Beis Din are not going to bring up on his behalf. That's what the Braisa means. Maishna, Mesis. So the question is, why is a Mesis different than any other case of Dinin Nefoshes? And the answer is, Omer Rav Chama bar Chanina, mi pirkei de Rav Chiya ba'aba Shmi'eli. I heard the following in a shir from Rav Chiya ba'aba. Pirkei is actually a public shir that would be given to the general public. So Rav Chiya ba'aba explained the following in a shir, not just in other words, in a shir to his Talmidim in the Yeshiva, but to a in a shir to the Welt. Shiny Mesis. The reason is a Mesis is different. Rachmana Omer Lo Sachmel, because the Pasuk says, Lo Sachmel, do not have Rachmanos on him, Velo Sachasa Olav, and don't cover up for him. Meaning, the words, Lo Sachmel teaches us like this, you usually have to have chemla. You have to have rachmanus on a person who's being judged for dinin nefashos, and try to bring up every possible argument to exonerate him. But here, where the Pasuk says, by a Mesis, Lo Sachmel, then you don't do that. Okay. Another that and the Gemara brings, here's another source for this point that ain't turning lamesis. Omer Shmuel bar Nachman, Omer Rab Yonason, Minayin she ain't turning lamesis. How do we know that we don't argue on behalf? How do we know that we don't argue on behalf of a mesis? We can learn that from this, we can learn that from the story of the from the story of the Nochash HaKadmoni. Namely, so here the Eibishter is telling Adam, what did you what were you doing? How could you eat from the Eitz HaDa'as? And then and Adam puts the blame on Chava, and Chava then goes and puts the blame on the Nochash, and then the Eibishter just says to the Nochash, because you did this, then therefore here's your punishment. Hashem doesn't take time to listen to any arguments that the Nochash HaKadmoni could have made. The Nochash, after all, could have argued several arguments in his own favor, but he didn't argue them. So why doesn't the Eibishter bring up those potential arguments? Because the snake himself did not bring it up. So therefore, so we see that, and that was he was trying to get them to do an Aveda. So how much more so we see when it comes to Avodah Zarah that I mean, this was also a form of Avodah Zarah, because he's telling them that if you eat from the Eitz HaDa'as, then you'll be like Hashem and you'll be able to create worlds, etc. So it's a form of Avodah Zarah. But in any case, the point is we see that that he didn't make these arguments on his own behalf, and Hashem didn't make them on his behalf because he's considered a Mesis. Okay, the Tosfos Shantz points out that you know, we still need both psukim. If you only had the pasuk lo sachmo, you would say that fine. You don't want to patter him completely. He was mesis after all, but maybe we should still try to bring up arguments in his favor. And the Nochash HaKadmoni was saying that we don't see anything. There's no tainus at all. Maybe a Nochash is different than a person. So therefore, we actually need both psukim. Anyway, so. So what do we mean that he could have had several arguments? My Havalei Lameimar, what would the snake have argued in his own favor, which was saying that Hashem didn't do that because he himself didn't? The answer is he could have argued Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Mishayim, Divrei Rav Shayim. He could have said, listen, if Hashem, the master, says such a thing, and the Talmud, Adam, is telling you something different, who do you listen to? Of course, you listen to the master. So in other words, yeah, I'm telling him to eat from the Eitz Hadas, but Hashem, he knew that Hashem said not to. He should have listened to Hashem. The fact that he listened to me is not my problem. Now, Tosfos points out that in that case, couldn't any Mesis get away with that argument? Tosfos says no, because the Nachash was never actually commanded, don't try to convince Adam and Chava not to eat from the Eitz Hadas. A regular Mesis is commanded in the Torah not to try to seduce somebody else into Avodah Zarah. So he doesn't have that excuse. But because you could say to him yourself, listen, Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Mishayim, Hashem told you not to be a Mesis, what are you doing? But here the Nachash himself was never commanded by Hashem, don't be a Mesis, therefore he could have maybe gotten away with that argument. Now Maharsha points out that's one argument. We said that Harbe Tainus, he could have had other arguments. So Maharsha says, you know, there's another point as well. The next point that the Gemara is going to say, Kol HaMosif Gereya, that when you're adding, you're actually subtracting. That could have been another argument that the Nachash used in his defense, that Chava added to the original mitzvah, and therefore that's why she was susceptible. But therefore that's at least two arguments that he could have made in his own favor. So the Gemara continues. Omar Chizkia, minayin shekol ha-mosif gereya. How do we know that if you add inappropriately, then you're actually taking away? Shenema, from that same story. Omar Lakim, here Chava explains to the Nachash that Hashem said about the tree, about the Eitz Hadas, you should not eat from it and you should not touch it. Now Hashem never said anything about touching it. What happened, as Rashi says on the Pasuk, and he brings over here, the Nachash then pushed Chava to touch the tree, and he said, look, you didn't die from that, so if you didn't die from that, then you're not going to die from eating it either, and that led to everything from there. Whereas if she hadn't mentioned that point about not touching it, then the Nachash wouldn't have had that basis to convince her to eat from it. There's midrashim that imply that Adam is the one who told her that extra thing, and she didn't realize that it wasn't directly from the Eibishter, in which case the fault is more on Adam. An interesting point, by the way, is that we always say you're supposed to make a siyag la'Torah, you're supposed to make a fence. So wasn't Adam correct, or Chava, as the case may be, correct in saying don't touch it as a siyag so as not to eat from it? So that's true, but first of all, you have to make sure that the siyag doesn't cause you to violate the mitzvah as it did in this case. But second of all, this is before they even had a Yetzirah. After all, the Yetzirah here was an external thing, the Nachash. It's not internal to them yet, so therefore there's not necessarily business making a siyag around what the Eibishter is saying. Or if you're going through, then at least it should have been that he should have made it clear. This part is the Isser from Hashem, and this part is the part that we should add for ourselves as the siyag. Okay. Rameshashi Amma Mehochar. Rameshashi says, I have a different pasuk where we also see this point of Kol HaMosif Gereya. The pasuk says about the size of the oren, Amosayim Vachetzi Orkoi. The length of the oren is 2.5 amos. Now, the word Amosayim is with an aleph at the beginning. If you were to take off that aleph, you'd have the word Mosayim, which means 200. Then you would say that the oren has to be 200 amos and half an amma long. By adding the letter aleph, you're taking away and making it its 2 amos instead of 200. So that's another example of Kol HaMosif Gereya. Different explanation. That's brought from the Vilna Gaon. It's also printed in Maharsha. It's also printed as a footnote under Maharsha. So first of all, Maharsha says, I mean, it's a little hard to say that we're saying in effect that the pasuk, if it didn't have the letter aleph in it, then the word Mosayim would be spelt mem sof yud mem. But that's not how it's spelt in Tanakh. The word Mosayim is always spelt with an aleph after the mem. So rather, Maharsha says, fine, we're not talking about the text of the Torah, we just mean when people are speaking. If a person were to speak and say Amosayim versus Mosayim, then it would make a difference. By saying Mosayim, where after all, in pronunciation, it's exactly the same, then it would mean 200. When he adds the Aleph at the beginning, then he reduces it down to 2. A footnote to Maharsha, which is a vort that's brought in the name of the Vilna Gaon, says another point as well. The Moisif is the Vav on the word Vochetzi. If it said Amosayim Chetzi Orkoi, then you would understand it to mean Amosayim, 2 amos, Chetzi Orkoi is half the length of the Oren, meaning the length of the Oren would be 4 amos. By putting the Vav, instead it makes it 2.5. So that's another way of looking at it, how it is that adding that extra letter is Gereya, is reducing. Ramasharshi, Omar Mehacha, Ramasharshi says you have a third example. Not Ramasharshi, sorry, Ashi, Omar. Another example, Ashtay Yerias, the Pasuk mentions about the curtains of the Mishkan, where the ones that were made out of goat's hair, there were 11 of them. And the expression is Ashtay Esrei. Now, without the ayin, it would be Shtay Esrei, which would be 12. By adding the ayin and making it Ashtay Esrei, you're reducing and bringing it down to 11. So it's another example of Kol HaMosif Gereya. Getting back to this matter of Udissa, these cases where a person admits in front of Edim that he owes money. So far, what we've said is if he admits it not in front of Edim, then it's no good. And he can say, Meshato Yisibacha, I was only joking. He can say, basically, listen, you're coming up with a ridiculous claim against me. I'm going to answer as if I admit to that ridiculous claim, but it's not actually so. Unless he knows that the Edim were there. We said we can't have the Edim hide behind the fence or something. Now, all of this would only apply only if Reuven is actually saying Meshata ani b'chol, that I'm joking. Aval omer lehoyu dvorim me'olam. But if he says that it never happened, I never admitted, chusat kafran, then even though he doesn't know that the Edim were there, nevertheless, that would make him a chazaka of a kafran, that he's a denier, that he's a liar, because after all, the Edim can say, you did say it. Fine, we don't know whether you were saying it sincerely or mashata or yisibacha, but at least we can say that you did say it, and therefore he's going to now claim and say, I never said it, then it would show that he's a liar. However, Omer Papa Breder of Achabada, no, not necessarily. Hochi Amin and Mishmei Rava. Omalei, it says on the side over here, it's supposed to say, Rapapa Breder of Achabada says, no, Hochi Amin and Mishmei Rava. We say in the name of Rava, Kol Milidichdi Lo Dichiri Inshi. Whenever you have something empty, something useless, then people don't necessarily remember it. So, in other words, this statement over here. A statement over here where he's saying that I owe you, where it wasn't knowingly in the presence of Edim, and where he has the ability to say Meshata Yisibacha, then he's not necessarily expected to remember it. So therefore, now when it comes to Beis Din and the Edim say, well, you said that he said it. The fact that he says I never said it, like Rava is saying, does not necessarily brand him as a liar, because he'd have every right in Beis Din to say, you know what, I taka forgot, because after all, I knew when I said it to begin with, it doesn't mean anything, that it was just Meshata Ani Bechor, and therefore I didn't bother remembering. You're right, now you ate him, have jogged my memory that I did say it, but nevertheless, that doesn't mean that when I said before that I didn't say it, that necessarily I was lying. So in short, in other words, according to Abaya, he would be considered a liar, and according to Rava, he would not. So now the Yad Ramah does point out and say, listen, we did say before that if he doesn't claim the Shata Yisbacha, then Beis Din doesn't advance that claim on his behalf, so that on his own behalf, so therefore that would be the same thing over here. If he says and the Edom say, wait a minute, you did say it, if he himself doesn't think to say Meshata Yisbacha, then the Yad Ramah points out that we Beis Din would not advance that claim on his behalf, and even Rava would agree that he's branded a liar. On the other hand, the Shach disagrees with that. Next, the Gemara tells, Hahu de Achman le Edim l'chavre b'kilsei. There was a case where a person had Edim hide out in his canopy bed. They're in his room. They have a canopy over there. They have a canopy bed. He's going to think that everybody over there is sleeping. And he says, Shimon says to Reuven, you owe me a mana. And Reuven says, yes. So he says, Iri v'shach, now he knows he's not going to want to admit in front of Edim. So he says, Iri v'shach v'levu alach sadi, those who are awake and those who are asleep, are you willing that there'll be Edim for you, on you? In other words, he's saying that the Reuven is going to think everybody's sleeping, so he's going to say sure, because if they're asleep, they're not going to know what's going on anyway. But he figures this way, by saying that, he'll later on have a basis for saying, you know what, they actually weren't asleep, they actually were awake, and therefore you, Reuven, are chayev. Omalei loy, and Reuven says, no, that I'm not willing to do, that the awake and the asleep should be Edim. Omar Rav Kahana, ha omalei loy. Listen, the fact is, he said that no, he wasn't willing to have it done in front of Edim. So therefore, so he would be able later on to claim that that in fact it wasn't a valid Hadar, and it was only Meshata Yisibacha. So, in a similar vein, in a similar vein, there was a person who had Edom hide out for somebody else in a caver. Apparently, the caver was not just a hole in the ground like we have them nowadays. It was more like an oihel, more like a mausoleum or something, an above ground structure where people could hide out in.
Rabbi,
Says, yes.
if the Gemara before said that when you have to have, you have to say, hey, these are my Edom, these are the Edom in front of the Edom, he said, only
Right.
then it works. So why would we think that if the guys are sleeping or if the guy's hiding in a caver, that that might work? Before we said it has to be a certain way, and now we're going less.
That's true, actually. So there's actually an argument about the Bach between the Bach and the Shach about that point. According to the Bach, it's true. There's not really so much a chiddush in this story, but rather the point is the Gemara is going to say further on that if Shosak, if he was quiet, then it would be valid. In other words, because in this case where Shimon is saying that the awake and the asleep should be Edim, if Reuven had said nothing in response to that, then yes, it would be considered valid Edus, even though he didn't say Atom Adai. And so only the Gemara is bringing this point, only to be medayik that point further on. That's according to the Bach. The Shach says actually that no, the point is that Davka, when he says no, that when he says no, then he doesn't even need later on to say Meshato. You see, b'cha, just the fact that he's saying that no, I'm not willing, these guys should be my Edim, even though you're claiming that they're asleep, is enough even without him saying Meshato, you see, b'cha. So according to that, then there is a chiddush in that story. Very good point. Thank you. So the Gemara tells, "Ahu de'achman edim mekivra l'chavrei." A person had edim hide out in a grave for somebody else. Amalei manali biyadcha. He says, "You owe me a mana." Amalei and Reuven says, "Hein." So he says, "Chayei umesi lever alochsadi." Are you willing that the living and the dead should be edim on you? Amalei loy. And he says, "No." Amalei Shimon ha. Amalei loy. So similarly, Reb Shimon says that, listen, after all, he said Reb Shimon. It says on the side over here. It says it should really be Reb Shimon Lakish. So it's Resh Lakish is saying. Now listen. After all, he said loy, and that he said loy, and therefore they're not valid edim. Now the Maharshal wonders in particular. I mean, yeah, the Maharshal wonders that about both of these stories. Really, what's the chiddush in, especially what's the chiddush in the first one? So okay, we just explained according to the Bach and the Shach, but then what's really the chiddush in the second case over here involving the living and the dead? So one thing is, the Nemuka Yosef explains, it's one thing when you have people are in a bed, he should realize that, you know what, it's very likely there are Edom over there. After all, it's very common that people are lying in a bed and they're not necessarily asleep. But in a caver, you don't usually have people hide out in a caver. So therefore, you might think that you might think that even if he was Moida, then maybe it's not a valid Haidah because he had no reason to think that Edom were there. And therefore, the point is, again, because he's saying Loi, because he's saying no, then therefore it's not valid Edus. But in other words, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, if he was Shoisik, if later on he didn't say, if he didn't say anything in response to, are you willing that the living and the dead should be Edom, then it would be a valid Odisse, it would be a valid Haidah. And that's the point, even though with a caver, there's less likely of a reason for him to think that there are actually Edom there. Okay. Another point. So Omer Ravina. So Ravina says, Vitamer a Papa, or some say a Papa said, Shmamina, Meha, we can learn from all of these stories, Hoda Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav, Tzorach Shiyama Atam Edai, that when on Omer Aleph, Rabbi Yehuda had said, in the name of Rav, you have to say Atam Edai, Loi Shnoki Omer Loivav, Loi Shnoki Omer Malvav Shosik. It doesn't matter whether the Loiva says, you're my Edim, or whether the Malva says, these are the Edim, and Vashosik Loiva, and the Loiva is quiet, either way that would work. Because we see from these two stories, only because he said, no, I'm not willing to accept them as Edim, him, does it not work? But if he had been quiet in the case of the bed or in the case of the caver, it would have worked because time and omer loiva lav, because we see only in these two cases, only because the loiva says no, then therefore he it means that he's not accepting them as edim. Aval shosik, avali shosik. But if he had been quiet, hochinami, then indeed it would work and it would be valid edus. Now, so the and that's talking about the Ran points out that's talking about when the Malva says Monali biyodcha and the Loiva says yes. But if when to begin with, if he doesn't say anything when the Malva says Monali biyodcha, then it means he just didn't bother answering him, and therefore the fact that he was quiet doesn't say anything doesn't mean anything at all. So that's the chiddush of these various dinim. Okay. Another example, the Gemara says, "Ahu da'av korale kav roshu." There was a certain person; people nicknamed him the Kav of Debts. Because they were saying about him, he owes so much money to people. It's like there's, if you add together the weight of all the shtaris against him, it comes out to a weight of a kav. A kav is around 3 pounds or so. So you're saying, those people are saying, look at this guy, he owes a lot of money to different people. Omar, but one time he says, man masik bi, what do you think? You think I owe money to everybody? Who, after all, is the ones to whom I owe money? Ela ploini ploini. All I owe is to ploini and ploini. Well, also the dinner kamei de Nachman. Well, that ploini and ploini went and took him to Beis Din. Look, he admitted that he owes us money. Omar Rab Nachman said, not necessarily. Odom also shalo las bias atzmai. A person may well not want to make himself, that he doesn't want to make it look like he's full of money. Because he's afraid of an ayin hara or whatever. So therefore, no, that's not a valid haidah unless there were edim present. Now, before we mentioned the point, Mashato Yisibacha, one difference is that before we were talking about where the malva came with a claim that says you owe me money, and he says sure, and we can say Mashato Yisibacha. Here, nobody's coming with a specific claim against him. There's rumors going around him, and he's saying that who do I owe money to? So that's the Nemuka Yosef and the Rosh, in fact, point out And then Tosfos also makes a similar distinction between whether there's somebody teveya from him. Is there somebody actually demanding? Then he can say that. Then he can say meshato yisibacha. But here, there's no. Here, there's no. Nobody's demanding anything. Nobody's claiming money from him in the first place. So he can say that I didn't want last BS at me. I didn't want to make myself look rich. And that's a valid claim. So again, unless there were edim. Another example, Hahuda have a curly Achbar the Shachiba Dinri. There was a person where they nicknamed him the mouse that sleeps on coins. So in other words, let's consider if a mouse has a pile of coins, what's it doing with it? By the way, that distinction that we're saying according to the Nemuka Yosef, according to Tosfos and the Rosh and Nemuka Yosef, the distinction between whether somebody else was Teveya him or not, the Rambam gives a different distinction actually. The Rambam says the difference is, was the original Haidah in the presence of the person that he claims he owes money? So then he can't say it was just a shaloi las bias atzmi. Then don't do it in a way. Don't be in front of the person who you're claiming is the malva. But in the case over here, where he was saying all I owe is to Pliny and Pliny weren't actually present at the time, and therefore he has the stronger claim of I didn't want las bias atzmi, rather than the weaker claim of mashato yisibachal, which is after all would require him to say that I was joking. Whereas here we can say that it's not even a matter of a joke, it's a matter of a serious reason to not do it. Anyway, so now, Hahuda have a kodale achbar the shoch of adinri. There was a person where they nicknamed him a mouse that sleeps on coins, meaning if you had a mouse has a pile of coins, what would it do with them? Nothing. So the same way, in other words, they were using this as a metaphor to mean this guy is a rich person, but he's cheap, and he doesn't want to have hana from his own money. So he's cheap on spending money on himself. Kika Shochiv, where before he passed away, Omar, he says, Planyo, Planyo, Masko Bezozi, that I owe money to Ploini and Ploini. Boss of the Shochiv, so after he passed away, also Tavino the Yoshin, that Ploini and Ploini came and took the Yoshin to Beis Din. Look, your father admitted before he passed away that he owes us the money. Also, the Kamed Rabbi Shmuel but Rabbi Yosi. So the case came to Rabbi Shmuel but Rabbi Yosi. Amalahu, he says, you know, Kia Minin Odom Ose Shalom Lasbias Atzmai. You know, when we say that a person would say, I didn't want to make it look like I'm rich. Hani mili mechayim. That would be when he's alive. That you could say he doesn't want an ayin hara or whatever. Aval acha misaloi. But you can't say he's going to die anyway. So you can't say odom osir shaloi las bias atzmai. So therefore, yes, we're going to have to make the Yoshin pay these two people because their father was murdered. Poru palva. Well, in the event the Yoshin paid off half of it. Tavino Ladina, Idach Pauga. Well, the two people took the Yoshim to Beis Din to collect the other half as well. This time, also the Kameh de Rabchia. This time, the second Din Torah came to Rabchia. Omalahu, he says, I don't know, it's not really so. Kishem Sha'odim Osu, Shalor Las B.S. Atzmai, just as much as a person might not want to make it look like he himself is rich because of an Ayin Hara or whatever, Kach Odim Osu, Shalor Las B.S. Bonob, you could say the same thing that he's doing on behalf of his children. He doesn't want to make it look like his children are rich, and therefore he might well have said that not as an actual admission, but rather just for that purpose.
What about the situation where a person passes away and you pass away with owing money is a terrible thing?
That's
Right,
true.
100%.
That's true. And if he had had, and if he had had them write it down, and if he had had it right, as the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, where they make a kinyan on it, to where they write it down, is different. But if he just says it that I owe money to Pliny and to Pliny, then yeah. Tosfos points out, now it is true. A person does not going to joke around before he's going to die. But there, that's the thing. Tosfos makes the same distinction that we just said before about within this din of Odisha. There, they actually said to him, "You owe us money," and he admits that yes. So then you can say that Shulei Lasbia wouldn't apply in that case. Here we're talking about where he on his own said that I owe them. Then we can say that he's saying Shulei Lasbia. So that's the distinction. But yeah, if he actually owed them the money and actually meant for it to be fulfilled, he would have told his Yoshim, be sure to pay Pliny and Pliny. Okay. So the Pshchir says that, yeah, when he said that he owes them money, it doesn't necessarily mean it's binding on his Yoshim. It may have just been Shaloy Las Bias Bonav. Omrulay, so they told him, Nezel and a header. Well, does that mean we have to pay back the half that they already paid us? Because after all, it turns out that there was no reason for them to pay us based on your new Psak Din. You see, by the way, you see the bittul that these people have, that they're willing to say, you know what, we received this money and we had taken them to Beis Din in the first place, but we're willing to give it back if you say so. Rabbi says no. Kvar Hurazokin, the elder Rabbi Shmuel, already paskin that they owed you the money. And I don't want to argue against him. So whatever you have, you can still keep. Now we are going to learn in the next parak when we say that a din Torah is reversed and when not. So even if this was one of the cases where in principle it could be, Rav Chiya says, you know what? I don't want to argue against Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi, he said that you were owed that money, so you can keep that, but you don't have to pay anything else.
We don't
But
mix
they
no.
don't have to pay anything else. What?
We don't mix the shiva around where the guy says I'm dying and I owe them money. It's
That's what
true.
I'm saying. That's what Tosfos had drawn the distinction, that where the Baalei Chayiv themselves come to him and say, you know, you owe us money, and he says, you're right, I do, or where he tells his Yoshim explicitly, give to Pliny and Pliny, then sure, we have to give it. But here we're talking about he on his own said, I owe money to Pliny and Pliny, and there we have the ability to say Shaloi Lasvi as Bonav.
And we're not saying, we don't say that because he realizes that he's passing away and
No,
he's
because that's what
made.
we're saying. Then he would either do it in front of the Baalei Din, or he would explicitly tell his Yoshim, make sure to pay this and this person. Or he would have a kinyan made or whatever, something like that.
Okay.
Okay. The Gemara continues. What happens? He makes a hadah in front of two Edim and they make a kinyan about it. Koisvid, then the Edim can even write a shtar saying that he owes the money, because Tosfos points out stam kinyan l'ksiva oimer. When they make a kinyan, by default we understand that it means that they can that it means that it's meant to be that it's meant to be written down. So therefore they can even write such a shtar even without him saying so. Vimlav in Koistvin, but if there was no Kinyan, then they can't write it, because he said the Hoidah in front of them, but that's not enough to turn it into. So even if he told them Atam Edai, and therefore that obligates them to pay, but still he'd prefer to keep it as a Milval Peh than a Milval Bishtar, so they don't have the right to write it down without his permission. What about Bifnei Shloish of Ekonomi Yadeh? What happens if he makes this Hoidah in front of three people, but there was no Kinyan? Now, three people is enough to be a Beis Din all by themselves. A Beis Din of three, after all, can declare things hefker. So does that mean that they would have the ability to turn it into a milva b'shtar? Rav Oma Koisvin, Rav Asi Oma Ein Koisvin. Rav says that you could write it. Rav Asi says you can't write it. Rav would say you could write it, because again, effectively they were based in, and therefore they have the ability, even Hefka based in Hefka. Rav Asi says that not, he didn't mean to make them a based in, he just meant to make them Edim, and Edim don't have the ability to write such a shtar. Have Uvda, now there was actually a case involving such a thing. V'chosh lo Rav, l'hod Rav Asi, Rav, even though he himself held that you could write it, he was choshish to what Rav Asi, said, and in practice he said, don't actually write it. So the Gemara continues, Omer of Adaba Abba, Ho Udisa, this kind of case of Udisa, when you have a Shtar Hoidah, so do we write the Shtar Hoidah? Zimnen Kasvinen, Vizimnen like Kasvinen. Actually, it's not going to be a blanket statement that we always write it or we always don't write it when there were three and there was no Kinyan. Rav Adaba Abba says it's really going to depend. Knifi v'yasvi, if the three people that he was moda in front of them were sitting together already as a bastion, and he comes in as moda in front of them, so he didn't invite them together for that purpose. So therefore, lo kasvin, and we can't write it because he only means to make them edim. After all, it happens that there were three sitting over there, but if there had been only two, he might well have been moda in front of them as well. He didn't actually tell them, I want you to be a bastion, which therefore you have the power to write such a shtar. Kanfinu ihu, but Rav Adaba Abba says if he himself gathered them together for the purpose, then kasvin, and then we can write it because the fact that he gathered together three people shows that he wanted to make a bastion for it. Rava Amar Filu Kanfiu Inu Iu Loi Kasvin, and Rava says no. Even if he gathered them together, we still don't write Abda Amalehu Hevru Alai Dayoni unless he says I want you to be Dayonim for me. Otherwise, it means that he just wants them to be Aiden. Ma'abrav of Ashi, Omer, and Ma'abrav of Ashi says, no, Afilo Omer, Hevru Alai Dayoni, like Asvinan. No, even if he says, be the Dayonim, they still don't have the right to write it. Ad de Kavi Duchta, until they set up a specific place where they're going to sit together as Dayonim do. Dayonim don't just sit in any old place. They decide in advance, here's where we're going to be sitting as a based in Shtibel. So, and the Rambam, in fact, learns if they're sitting in the Mokam HaKavua, then it means that it didn't need for him to gather them together. It would be enough. They're sitting in the Beis Din Shtibel, and he came there. He obviously meant to take them as he obviously meant to take them as Dayanim. But we're saying if they're not sitting in the Beis Din Shtibel, then Ma'abar Rav Ashi is saying they have to actually decide on a particular place we are going to sit, which is what Dayanim do. V'shalchi u'mezamni le'le Beis Dina, and they come and they go and send a message officially summoning him to that Beis Din, and then he admits. Then it's clear that he's doing it in front of Dayonim, who have the power to write a shtar, and then therefore we can write that shtar and turn it into a milvah b'shtar, and because then also you have, then there's a pirsum to it. The whole point of a milvah b'shtar is you can collect from the chosim mishubodim, and it's well known so that anybody else knows that in the future if they buy from him, then it may be taken away from them, etc. So we need all of that. In order, says Ma'abar Rav Ashi, in order for it, what was before milvah al peh, in order for it to be turned into a milvah b'shtar, would be you would need all of that. You would need that he actually, that the Beis Din is actually sitting as an official Beis Din, and that they summoned him, etc. Tosfos discusses, is the halacha like Ma'abar Rav Ashi, or is it not? Tosfos brings that Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershom say the halacha is like Ma'abar Rav Ashi in two cases, one of them being Udissa, one of them being this case. On the other hand, he brings from Seder Tanoim Bamiroyim, a Sefer from the time of the Gaonim, that says the other way around. The halacha is usually like Ma'abar Rav Ashi, except for two cases, this being one of them. So in the end, So is the halacha like Ma'abar Rav Ashi or not? That's a machlokas rishonim. Okay, so we'll continue with these dinim of Odisha tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.